And more about understanding specifically, you know, what aspects are most concerning and what aspects are most solvable. I think there's a lot of variation in terms of different crops, in terms of different farms, different practices, different regions, lots of differences out there. And I think historically we've just kind of had a very long laundry list of all of the reasons for concern. And I think that now those are well established. What this paper is trying to do is step back and say, okay, what are the big changes that are happening that really require like some serious effort to try to remedy? And I think going along with that, it's like trying to think about, okay, then what are the specific solutions? So going from generals to specifics, both on the sort of definition of the problem and the possible solutions, I think will help in terms of actually taking the problem seriously, but also kind of putting the effort where it's going to be most beneficial.
From Stanford, we've been speaking with Professor David Lobel. His latest paper in the Proceedings of the National Academy is A Half Century of Climate Change in Major Agricultural Regions, Trends, Impacts, and Surprises. Find links to follow up in my weekly show blog, Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. David, thank you for spending time with our listeners.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
We know cities will get even hotter. How can we stay comfortable without burning more fossil fuels? A team of experts led by Dr. Timothy Zhang of Pacific Northwest National Lab investigated common cooling ideas, from making roads white to living green roofs. What works best in most climates? We get answers now and a new mantra for urban development with co-author Scott Krayenhoff. Scott is Associate Professor at the University of Guelph School of Environmental Sciences. From Ontario, Canada, Scott Krayenhoff, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks, Alex. Good to be here.
Well, let's start with expectations of extreme heat in the three cities in the way that we're going now, and then we'll get to the best solutions. The classic case is Phoenix in the desert heat of Arizona. From your paper, just to throw in a few numbers, in the scenario of 4.5 degrees C of global mean temperature rise, the hottest week of the year in Phoenix would see temperatures going from 109.9 Fahrenheit, that's 43.3 C, to 114 Fahrenheit, which is 45.6 C. Is that the feel-like temperature you were using, or the Universal Thermal Climate Index? What does that temperature mean?
Yeah, the Universal Thermal Climate Index, UTCI, is essentially a measure of the complete heat exposure of an individual. And we're using it to capture all the different ways that the local meteorology or climate affects our felt perception of heat or cold, but in this case, heat. And so we all know from our experience that it's not just air temperature that affects how warm or cool we feel. It's also things like humidity, wind speed, are we in the shade or in the sun? And the one aspect that UTCI also captures, and our models as well in this study also captured, that a lot of folks aren't as aware of, is that the actual temperatures of the surfaces, not just the air, but the surfaces around us actually provide warming or cooling depending on their temperature relative to us. So a quick example of that last piece is if we're standing on a grass field versus if we're standing on a parking lot, an asphalt parking lot in the middle of a sunny day, we're going to get a lot more heat from that warmer asphalt than we would from, say, grass. So that also matters, and these things are all accounted for in the UTCI.
Why did you pick Toronto and Miami as additional case studies?
Even though Phoenix is extremely hot, you know, a city like Miami is very humid, and that presents difficulties for the human physiology in terms of cooling ourselves, because our main cooling mechanism in hot weather is sweating, and our sweat doesn't evaporate as effectively in more humid conditions. That's why we don't feel very comfortable in more humid conditions for an equivalent air temperature. Now, there's been recent research that's come out just in the last few years suggesting that as we go forward into the future, some of these humid cities, and Toronto is, you know, not as humid as Miami, but it still has reasonably humid conditions for periods every summer, that some of these cities that are quite humid are going to face real problems with heat stress and with thermal discomfort and worse from the heat.
How does excess heat make air pollution more deadly, Scott?
Yeah, well, I think that's a very complex question. They're intertwined in multiple ways. I mean, one simple way is that higher air temperatures change the reaction rates, you know, in terms of chemical reactions that form different pollutants, such as ozone. Obviously, our health, you know, if an individual's physiology has to respond to both heat and air, you know, air quality, poor air quality at the same time, that's going to prevent, cause complications in terms of our body's ability to respond to either one, because there's this, you know, it has to respond to two things at once. So that's getting a little bit beyond my area of expertise, but that's a very important consideration, is to consider both of these factors.
All right, so before we get into your solutions that were examined, how serious are the challenges of urban heat as global warming proceeds?
I think they're very considerable. Already heat and cold temperature effectively is, you know, of all natural hazards, is the, you know, causes the most mortality and death worldwide and in North America. And, you know, that's only going to get worse. I mean, if you can look at in the Pacific Northwest in 2021, the extreme heat there caused hundreds and hundreds of deaths, premature deaths. We're headed towards conditions where that's going to become, not necessarily the deaths, because there's a lot we can do about it, but in terms of that level of extreme heat in the coming decades is going to become more commonplace, very likely.
Okay, now, the biggest discovery in this new paper, from my perspective, is the winning benefit of street trees. Talk to us about the positive role for them in this new, hotter future.
I mean, there's a variety of considerations in terms of street trees in a hotter future, some of which we didn't cover in the paper, and I'll just mention them briefly. For example, how well are they going to survive in these future conditions, and which species might survive better in these warmer future conditions? So trees, I mean, they're not the only thing that provides shade in a city, but they're one of the, you know, they obviously have a whole other range of co-benefits beyond reducing heat. But as I was mentioning when I spoke about the UTCI at the start of this episode, one of the key factors in terms of how warm or cool we feel is the radiant environment, and in particular, are we in the shade or not? And so trees obviously provide shade. And so they're, you know, in my view, one of the key factors, you know, trees shouldn't be planted everywhere in the city. I'm by no means saying plant trees everywhere in the city and they're the be-all, end-all. But they're a very important contributor to improving outdoor thermal comfort in the city. And as we all know, I think most of us experience, the more time we spend outdoors, that's a positive predictor of health outcomes. And so the more we can keep our outdoor urban environments reasonably comfortable, the better. And trees can play a major role in that. Now, of course, there's other things that can provide shade. Obviously, just our buildings in cities provide shade. We can also, you know, use awnings and other what we call gray infrastructure, so non-vegetated infrastructure, to provide shade as well.
It's amazing what trees can do, though. In 2018, I spoke with Professor Matt Santamoris. He was in Australia at the time, and he launched a drone that measured 158 degrees Fahrenheit, that's 70 degrees C, on the upper level of a car park in Darwin. And people said it felt like a river of fire at that time. And just below that, at ground level, under a tree, the temperature was measured almost 30 degrees Fahrenheit cooler. So people have known for centuries that trees work. Why don't we have more of them in cities?
Well, you know, I think they do present some challenges. For example, you know, roots underground can interfere with infrastructure, municipal infrastructure. They require a certain, you know, certain conditions to survive, a certain amount of soil, water, et cetera. That's not necessarily available in every street in the whole city. So, yeah, there can be some limitations, but I think, you know, there's many, many cities that I'm aware of that have goals to plant more trees, to increase their tree canopy cover, and they're succeeding in most cases. Obviously, incrementally, this doesn't happen overnight, but, you know, the other factor here is that a mature tree takes many years, decades, really, to mature. And so we can decide we want more trees in our cities, but this is not going to happen overnight. And so really we need to be thinking, this is one of the reasons why, even though, you know, extreme heat is already deadly and already, you know, having negative impacts, but considering that that's likely to get at least somewhat worse, we need to be proactively thinking, how can we adapt now, take steps to, for example, plant trees, such that they are mature, you know, in 20, 30 years when heat waves may be more intense.
Although I have to say, I live near a tree farm, and they are taking 20-foot-high trees and taking them out in great numbers to various cities. So it doesn't have to start from a seedling by any means. I'm wondering, can a tree strategy work in Phoenix, which already has a water shortage?
Now, that's a really key question, and that's not one that we're really diving into in this work or necessarily qualified to answer. Yeah, that's going to be a critical consideration, because trees provide more air temperature cooling in drier environments if they have enough soil water to draw from. And that's the big if. Now, there are, of course, other species of trees that you can use in a city like Phoenix that are more drought tolerant, you know, so they require less water. Some of them also can have very deep roots that reach the water table, very deep underground. There are, I think, in terms of shade provision, I think trees can still be quite effective in a place like Phoenix. Now, the other consideration there is, because it's a very low-density city, you know, and very automobile-centric, shade is going to provide pleasant outdoor conditions for outdoor activity like walking, cycling, et cetera, more efficiently, more effectively, the higher the density. So that's another consideration.
But trees can also slow down air movement, as you do talk about. Tell us about the balance of trees and air pollution in cities.
Yeah, that's a very complex topic, and we took a sort of a first-order approach in this work. What we looked at was the fact that trees can have a couple effects on airflow. One is they can, just by virtue of the fact that they're a barrier, they can slow down the wind. Which can, you know, obviously a lot of our automobiles are emitting pollutants near the ground, and they can prevent essentially ventilation of those pollutants. They can have another essentially negative effect on air quality, which is, as they cool the air, they essentially reduce the amount of air that is diluting these pollutants, because we're no longer churning the atmosphere as much or mixing the atmosphere as much. But they can have positive impacts. So, for example, they can provide deposition surfaces, which remove pollutants from the air. And, you know, this is obviously dependent on species. It's dependent on a variety of factors, depending on where they're planted relative to the emissions, things like this. They can also sometimes emit gaseous substances, essentially, that can contribute to the air pollution. So it's a very, you know, the impact of trees on air quality in the streets, you know, at the level that we all walk around and breathe in, is a very complex topic that we don't get into in detail. But we wanted to, really what we wanted to do in this paper is start to get a sense of not just, you know, what's the impact of one of these heat adaptation strategies like street trees on air temperature or on outdoor thermal comfort, but we wanted to look at multiple outcomes, so we start to get a more holistic view of which strategy might be optimal.
Yes, you were looking at combinations of strategies, and your study also considers green roofs and cool roofs. Could you describe what those are?
Certainly, yeah. So cool roofs are essentially roofs primarily that are very reflective. So one way to think about this is, like, a typical darker roof might, in terms of how much energy is coming down from the sun, from sunlight, they might, you know, a typical dark roof might only reflect, you know, 10 or 20% of that and would absorb the rest. A cool roof or a highly reflective roof is going to reflect, you know, typically over 50% of the energy reaching it. And so it bounces, a lot of the energy, it bounces straight back out to space. And so that heat doesn't stay in the urban environment and heat the air and warm up the environment. Now, a green roof takes a different strategy to provide cooling. It essentially, you know, it's like taking, you know, a very simple way of thinking about it is like taking a slice of your lawn, you know, down to maybe 10 or 15 centimeters deep and putting that on your roof. And of course, that means your roof has to be engineered for that, and you know, your roof has to be fairly flat. So it's not going to work on every building, and in fact, it's not going to work on a lot of residential buildings without being properly engineered.
Why is a roof covered in photovoltaics more effective than a green roof covered with living plants?
Yeah, that's a great question. So really, here what we're thinking about is we got to get back to this idea of multiple outcomes. So what photovoltaics do, well, they do multiple things. One is solar panels, is they generate energy, right? They generate energy that we can use for various purposes, such as heating or cooling or buildings, sending it back to the grid, et cetera. They do a couple other things. One is they shade the building. So by shading the building, they change how much, how warm it's going to get inside, and or if we're using an air conditioner, how much energy we're going to have to use to keep our building interior cool. And, they also are going to have impacts on the outdoor environment. So we evaluated all those aspects in our study. And what we found is that these photovoltaic panels, what they do really well, obviously, is generate energy, generate electricity. And that can be used with the right conditions, which includes the ability to store that energy, at least over shorter periods, to cool building interiors. And so they essentially block the sun's heat from hitting the building to a certain extent, right, by covering the roof, and then they also provide energy that we can use to power our air conditioners. Now, in a more passive situation, a green roof might be more optimal if we want to, not think about, cooling our building interiors with air conditioners. The other factor is, there's other factors that we weren't able to account for in the study, such as stormwater management, which is a major consideration for a lot of municipalities. And, green roofs are going to support with that, where PV roofs aren't or solar panels aren't. So there's, this is a multifactorial problem. There's lots to consider. But if we're just thinking about outcomes like we want to keep our building interior cool, solar panels are going to, and we can use the energy from our solar panels to power our air conditioning units. Solar panels are going to be superior to green roofs, according to our findings to date.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex with our guest, Dr. Scott Krayenhoff. We are talking about cooling cities down. For a long time, people were suggesting painting the roads white to reflect more solar energy. Why not do that?
Yeah, there's some nuance here, but the upside of doing so, and this is why it's been suggested, would be that, just like the reflective roofs, you're going to bounce a lot of that energy from the sun straight back out in space, a lot of it. Now, the issue is that you can't go that high in terms of reflectivity of at the ground level, because you're going to blind people, blind drivers. We all know a highly reflective surface is blinding. Secondly, the high reflection of the sun's energy, not all of it goes straight back up to the atmosphere. Some of it's reflected more laterally towards buildings or towards, say, pedestrians. And that can actually have a negative impact on a hot day on your thermal comfort. So it can essentially, if you have a road that's painted with a high reflectivity coat of paint, it can reflect a lot of radiation towards your body, warming you, more than the actual air temperature cooling benefit in terms of your actual experience. And the same thing for buildings. It can reflect a lot of energy towards buildings, which can go through the windows and warm the interior. So I think these kinds of technologies need to be used carefully. If they're used away from areas where pedestrians walk and away from buildings that, need a cool internal environment, I think they could still have some benefit. But otherwise, our study finds that they either don't have a great benefit, or they can actually have a bit of a negative effect on thermal comfort and building energy use for cooling.
Okay, now I may have misunderstood this, but your paper appears to claim a full implementation of street trees and solar, maybe on every possible rooftop, could actually counter the excess heat we expect as this century goes on. Can this duo really protect city dwellers from further climate heating for the rest of this century?
Yeah, again, there's a lot of nuance here, so let me try to see if I can unpack it a little bit. So I think what we're saying is, in terms of like our outdoor experience of heat, so if you're walking down the sidewalk in your city, the areas that currently don't have tree cover, if we add tree cover there, your experience of heat under that tree cover near the end of the century, so under a much warmer climate, will be lower than your experience now in the sun without any shade in extreme heat.
The new mantra is solar on every roof and trees on every street where practical. Don't waste time and money on lesser solutions if you want a livable city, and boy, do we need those. Now, how do we get this out to city planners and governments and citizens alike?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I would tend to back off from being that certain of that conclusion. Now, I think there's maybe one or more reasons why. So first, I think there's other outcomes we haven't looked at yet. So in this paper, we looked at three outcomes. We looked at the outdoor thermal environment, the indoor thermal environment, how much energy use we would need to keep that indoor thermal environment comfortable, and then air quality. Now, as I've mentioned before, we haven't factored in some other pieces like cost, like the effect on greenhouse gas emissions and therefore climate mitigation, like stormwater management, for example. So, I mean, I think there's more work to be done, and this is how science progresses. You know, we make hopefully a significant step forward, and then right now in our lab, we're already working on the next iteration of this kind of work. I think what we're saying is that I think trees and solar panels are, especially if we're considering less of a passive situation, but active cooling of interior environments, that solar panels on roofs plus trees in the streets, especially streets where air pollution is not a major concern, yeah, that's probably a pretty good solution, and there's more work to do.
In 2020, you led an article on street tree impacts on pedestrian-level climate. You've been working on urban heat solutions for years. Why? What got you into this, and why do you keep going?
Yeah, that's a great question. I go back to about 20 years ago when I was, early on in my studies, and I was a professor I was working with posed a question. I think he'd gotten some grant money to address this question, and the question was, if every second building roof in Toronto had a green roof, how much cooler would it be on a typical summer day in the city? And that question just fascinated me. At the time, we scarcely had the modeling tools to address questions like that. But I was fascinated by it, and I was fortunate to get some really great mentoring by one of my mentors, Alberto Martilli, who I still work with regularly, And we took a first crack at that, and we had to do some serious model development just to start to get an answer to that, because there were no green roofs in our meteorological models back then. There were scarcely urban areas represented in our meteorological models back then. So we've come a long way since then. We've been doing a lot of work, and as you mentioned, a lot of my work has been on street trees and how do we represent in these large-scale meteorological and climate models, how do we represent the effects of street trees? Because we're very good at representing forests, for example, where it's just trees, or we're reasonably good at representing in these models just buildings and roads. But as soon as you plant trees, now your trees are shading your buildings are shading your trees are shading your roads, and they're sheltering each other from the wind, and there's all kinds of interactions. And so that's, we've been working on trying to capture some of these interactions that are actually quite significant if you want to understand how trees are going to affect your local climate in the city.
From Guelph, Canada, we've been speaking with Dr. Scott Krayenhoff, co-author of the new paper, Prioritizing Urban Heat Adaptation Infrastructure Based on Multiple Outcomes, Comfort, Health, and Energy. And that is published in PNAS, May 5th, 2025. You can find links to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Scott, thank you for sharing your time with us.
Thanks very much, Alex. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Alex Smith. for Radio EcoShock. That's all for this week. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening and caring about the world.
Suns are blazing like a thousand suns. Heat's arising, no place to run. Sweat drips down, feels like I'm on fire. Burning up, can't cool this desire.
Shadows gone, nowhere to hide. Thermometer's broken, climb too high. Air so heavy, it's hard to breathe. Praying for rain, some sort of reprieve.
Heatwave blues can't escape the heat. Dancing in the sun on burning concrete. Heatwave blues, no relief.
Dangerous days and sweltering nights.
AC's busted, it's hotter inside.
Fans spin slow like the heat's worldwide. Ice melting fast in my glass of tea.
Time's crawling by in this misery.
Look up to the sky, hope for a breeze. Wish for a cloud, bringing some ease.
Turn on the news, hear the weatherman. Says more heat to come, hold on if you can. Neighbors all groan as the sun beats down. Front porch empty, deserted town. Dogs lie still under shady trees. Searching for cool in this fiery sea.
Going into uncharted territories that are more analogous to some of the most disruptive events in Earth's history that cause massive warming and sometimes extinction events.
Going downhill, 90 miles an hour. I said hit the brakes. You said hit the accelerator.
Yo, this is Black Tai Chi, the mic conductor, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in B Baby BC.